Welcome to 3CR, Michael, and thank you so much for agreeing to talk to Solidarity Breakfast.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's have a bit of a starting point with this East Timor dispute. It's been going for many years now, just since 2001, hasn't it?
Well, 2002 was the year that East Timor had its independence restored. 2002 was a significant year. The Timorese independence was restored in May 2002. A few months before that, Australia dropped out of the binding dispute jurisdictions, binding dispute resolution jurisdiction, for two treaties. One was UNCLOS, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, and the other was the Maritime Boundary Jurisdiction under the International Court of Justice. So Australia dropped out of the binding dispute resolution procedures for those two treaties shortly before East Timor's independence.
And that was really deliberate, you reckon?
Well, the timing suggests that it was. It suggests that Australia's continental shelf case was not something they were very confident about, being able to win in a kind of third-party arbitrated neutral dispute resolution. So they dropped out of those two particular treaties. That left Timor-Leste at a particular disadvantage. They couldn't go to a neutral third umpire. And that's set the tone, I suppose, for some of the subsequent developments in Australia and East Timorese relations over the Timor Sea.
I mean, regardless of all the rules and regulations and laws, the fact is, ethically and morally, this is absolutely despicable what Australia has done to East Timor, one of the poorest nations in the world and a very young new nation relative to other nations. How does Australia justify this, you reckon?
Well, Australia points to the fact that though there's no maritime boundary between the two nations, and that is an unusual, that's the only maritime boundary we haven't settled with our neighbours. Australia points to the fact that we do have revenue-sharing agreements, and that Australia argues that some of those are relatively generous to East Timor. Now, East Timor, on the other hand, argues that it's not generous if you give us 90% of what's all ours.
Yes, exactly.
The median line. So there are debates there. But, you know, certainly Australia has a justification. I think people need to be aware of what those justifications are. They argue that, you know, there's revenue-sharing agreements that have produced $16 billion for East Timor, and that's, you know, the majority of its budget, which is true. Now, of course, you need to go and then look at what the Timorese are arguing. The Timorese are arguing that on a median line settlement, that even larger percentage of these resources would be Timorese. They're the two positions. But when you think about why Australia dropped out at that time from a binding dispute resolution jurisdiction, it raises questions as to whether Australia was in fact very confident in its position, or was just being pragmatic and exercising its power.
But I don't think it's up to Australia to decide what is appropriate or what is large or small income for East Timor in the first place. To say that is completely patronising, if not very colonial, in the attitude toward East Timor.
Well, people can make their own judgments on Australia's behaviour there and and its position. One of the things that Australia argues, and China argues the same, is that they're in favour of negotiations, bilateral negotiations. And it's true that bilateral negotiations are, you know, a common method for solving disputes like this. But the other thing about bilateral negotiations that's really important to understand is that it puts a lot of power in the hands of the more powerful nation. And that's why China uses that sort of line in South China Sea, and it's presumably why Australia uses that approach here in the Timor Sea. And it's really important for your listeners to understand, I think, that Australia has a median line boundary with every other nation that we border, including New Zealand, which we settled in 2004. There is no maritime boundary at all with East Timor. That's what you need to understand. Australia has maritime boundaries settled with all its neighbours, except for East Timor. And that's why it's called the Timor Gap. Instead of a maritime boundary, there's a series of revenue-sharing agreements.
But Danai Gusmão, the former president of East Timor, who's representing East Timor at The Hague at the moment, says that the agreement signed in 2001-2 was done so under duress. How far do you think they will go with that sort of argument?
Well, I think you might be referring to the CMATS treaty, which is a little bit later, 2006, and he's referring to the allegations that the Australian Secret Service Agency, ASIS, was spying on the Timorese negotiating team. Those allegations come from a well-placed source, a former ASIS operative. So
That's 2012, isn't it, when Canberra was spying and there was a scandal about it.
Well, the actual spying took place in 2004. The alleged spying. The treaty was signed in 2006, but Timor didn't become aware of it until some time later, and that's what became an issue then.
So the argument by Guzmán is not going to matter too much.
Well, separate to this conciliation that's going on right now, Timor-Leste is challenging the CIMATS treaty in the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague. That's a separate matter. And they're arguing that the CIMATS treaty is void for want of good faith because Australia spied on the negotiating team for commercial advantage. And they're arguing that under the Vienna Treaty, which is the treaty that governs all treaties, that shows a lack of good faith and makes that treaty void. So that decision hasn't been that process hasn't come to an end yet. We don't know the outcome of that process, but certainly Timor is objecting to that treaty.
Just to clarify things a bit, I got confused there when you said I have jumped to the CMAP treaty. What were the if you could just give us a bit more clarity in the different agreements, that would be helpful.
Yes, well, it might help if we go back to 1972 really quickly.
Yep.
Back then, Timor-Leste was, or East Timor, was Portuguese Timor. It was still the colonial era. Australia settled a continental shelf boundary that was very favourable to Australia with Indonesia in the Timor Sea. But, of course, part of the Timor Sea is Portuguese Timor, now called East Timor. And the Portuguese would not agree to a continental shelf boundary that favoured Australia because they felt, correctly, that international law was already heading in the direction of a median line, and they were right. So there never was a boundary between Australia and Portuguese Timor, and there still isn't today with an independent East Timor, and there wasn't one when it was forcibly integrated into Indonesia either. What there was instead was an agreement between Australia and Indonesia to divvy up the resources in there 50-50. Then with the restoration of Timorese independence in 2002, that had to be renegotiated. It was a bit of a sore point for the East Timorese, as you can well imagine.
Mm.
And at that point, Australia, there was a series of treaties, including the Timor Sea Treaty, the Sunrise Unitisation Agreement, and then later CMATS. And there's three interrelated treaties that basically govern revenues in that area.
Mm.
The upshot of it was that Timor-Leste gets 90% and Australia gets 10% of this particular area called the Joint Petroleum Development Area. But on a median line settlement, that would be 100% Timor's territory. Slightly more complicated is a field called the Greater Sunrise Field, where it's arguably, depending on where the lateral boundary is, there's an argument over how much of that is actually East Timor's. That's not necessarily to do with whether there's a median line or not, but the Timorese certainly, their position is that they would be getting a larger percentage of that on fair boundaries than they get today. So three treaties, all kind of interlinked. The one that the Timorese really object to is the CMATS treaty, which puts off maritime boundary settlement for 50 years.
Hmm.
Now, they agreed to that back in 2004-06 when they were quite weak. They didn't have a budget. Their entire budget was aid money, and they needed to get some revenue flowing. And they later found, well, they allege, based on the testimony of a former ASIS agent, that they were spied upon in that process as well.
So it's quite complicated, isn't it?
It is a complicated series of events. But because Australia dropped out of the jurisdiction that allows for a compulsory determination, a third-party determination, Timor has now adopted this course that they're on now, which is called a compulsory conciliation. So the conciliation is a reserve dispute settlement process for this sort of situation. It's never been used before. And I can explain that to your listeners if you're interested.
Yep, sure.
Okay, so the compulsory conciliation has been triggered by Timor-Leste. What it means is that any party to the UNCLOS agreement, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, even if they have dropped out of the compulsory jurisdiction, compulsory third-party dispute resolution, which Australia has, must turn up to a conciliation. So Australia has appointed two conciliation commissioners, Timor has appointed two, and there's a fifth one that they've all agreed upon. And this will sit for a number of months, probably about a year, and make a bunch of recommendations about what should happen in relation to the maritime boundary. This is not an issue that Australia has ever wanted to discuss before. Australia will not negotiate over the maritime boundary. It will negotiate over other things like revenue shares, but not over the placement of a maritime boundary. The Commission is going to come down with a report. Australia must be a party to the conciliation, and then Australia must start good faith negotiations with Timor-Leste, using that report as the and its recommendations as the basis for discussion. However, Australia is not bound to follow those particular recommendations, so it is a weaker process than the one that Australia dropped out of.
But they're still arguing they have no, this court has no jurisdiction over this.
Well, that's right. The first thing that Australia has done, and you're absolutely right, is argue that there is no dispute, because the CEMATS Treaty, by agreement, puts off maritime boundary determination for 50 years. And the Timorese did sign that treaty back in 2006 when they were in a very weak position and didn't have any funds. They literally had no budget. And at that point did not realise the allegations of spying that were to take place subsequently. So Timor's trying to have that overturned, basically, and is basically arguing that it has a right under international law to a maritime boundary. Timor also has the option of terminating the CEMATS Treaty. So if this challenge to the jurisdiction, Australia arguing that there is no dispute, were to succeed, that would not be the end of the matter, because Timor actually has the option of terminating that treaty because there's been no development. And if they did that, then we could come back to this point again, presumably, where there's a compulsory conciliation. And this time around, the next time around, Australia wouldn't have this argument. So one way or another, I expect we're going to see a report from a conciliation commission.
Yes, but it's also interesting that, that's a certain double standard, if you like, when it comes to the way they claim China's behaving in the Spratly Islands, basically. And they even have sent a military force to safeguard the so-called maritime orders in the waters of other countries. So that's a bit tricky, isn't it?
Yes, and indeed that's quite sensitive about people making that point. But it's certainly a point that one might make. So Australia has adopted a fairly strong position that China should follow the rule of law in the South China Sea dispute. There has been a very strong finding from the UNCLOS tribunal on that dispute that favoured Philippines in most respects. Australia, DFAT says we aren't doing that in the Timor Sea, but it's difficult to see the real distinction. China basically doesn't recognise the verdict, and Australia doesn't recognise the jurisdiction.
Yes.
It's a fairly fine distinction to make, and some might argue that the net effect is the same, that when it comes to the crunch in terms of a binding dispute resolution, Australia is adopting a fairly similar position to China, which is that they won't be party to these sort of determinations, but rather favour bilateral negotiations. And as I said earlier, of course, one of the things that bilateral negotiations do is favour the much stronger of the two negotiating parties.
Bullying the weak.
Well, one might draw that conclusion. There's certainly a power differential between China and Philippines, and there's certainly a power differential between Australia and Timor-Leste.
Yes, and it's difficult to sit back and watch this, because East Timor is a poor country, in one of the poorest nations in the world, and Australia, one of the richest, is not playing fair, according to many people, I'd say, including myself. But that's a point of view anyone can have, I guess.
Well, your listeners, can
make up their own mind.
Make up their own minds, but there's lots of resources on the internet to go and check out, and you can go, for example, to the Lowy Interpreter, where you'll see DFAT's position outlined and responses to that position, including some that I wrote, where you can see kind of debate going on over the two positions. And it came up shortly after the South China Sea determination. But there's heaps of things on the internet that people can read.
But it's nice to have a bit of a chat about it too.
Oh, of course, because it's a complicated thing, as your listeners have probably gathered by now. There's a complicated history to it. But the bottom line is this: there is no maritime boundary between Australia and Timor-Leste. That is the only gap in all our maritime boundaries. And with the exception of the 1972 boundary with Indonesia in the Timor Sea, which is a continental shelf that favours Australia, every other border we have is median line. Every other one.
Yeah, begs
which
to
is the vast majority.
Yes,
and that's what Timor wants.
Yes.
There's even a median line boundary with Indonesia in the Arafura Sea. It's just the Timor Sea where there was a continental shelf argument. And basically Indonesia got taken to the cleaners in 1972 and they know it. Yeah, and Australia tried to replicate that with Portuguese Timor, failed to do so because the Portuguese wouldn't buy it.
Mm.
And that's why there's a gap, that's why there is no boundary there, and that's why there are instead revenue-sharing agreements, and that's where we are today. Timor is trying to get a maritime boundary.
Yeah, it's almost a continuation of the decolonisation process in the end, isn't it? All the complications it throws up.
Well, there is a legacy there. Yes, that's right. Although in this case you might look back on the actions of the Portuguese administration just in this respect and think, well, they made the right decision
not to agree to it.
Yes,
very unlike what's happening in West Papua, but that's another story.
Yes,
but anyway, thank you very much, Michael. That was
very
interesting.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.